going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, finally, welcome back to another edition of WTF Prime Time! This is Evangelist here, joined once again by Gog Dog.
Hey!
How do you feel?
I feel okay, actually. Bear with me if I do sound a little off. I've been dealing with allergies pretty hardcore today, but I feel alright. I'm just a little stuffed up. But I'm good. I'm fine. I'm ready to do this.
I hear you. I've been going to a movie night every couple weeks. The guy who hosts them has a cat, and I'm good for the first 3 hours, but this is multi-movie night. So at hour 7, I'm kind of feeling like, oh wow, I need to escape.
But you're allergic to cats?
Not as bad as before, but it creeps up on me over the course of several hours. Huh. And I always try to tough it out, because the more I tough it out, the less bad it is the next time. But it can be rough. Also here with us today is Aaron.
Yes, I also am in the cat allergy realm.
Sucks, because they really want to walk up and rub their face on you.
Yeah. Like, hi, look at this. Your face is going to be exploding in 3 to 4 hours.
Yeah, I'm lucky. I think the only thing I'm allergic to is whatever this pollen is in the air that gets me a couple times a year. Outside mm-hmm. of that, I have no allergic reactions to anything. So,
yeah. What I don't have an allergy to is new episodes of Transformers Prime.
Thank God.
We have Transformers television again.
Would make this recording very awkward if you did.
Yeah, we're just going to do a Prime Time. All about Rescue Bots. I still haven't seen Rescue Bots.
Not bad.
I feel really bad about it. I'm gonna solve that this week, I think. Also, this is the first episode of Prime Time, I think, where we're recording Prime Time, and we potentially have more than a handful of Prime toys on our desks.
Yeah.
So, hey, now we're fully merchandised out. So, we are coming here to talk to you about Orion Pax Part 1, the Season 2 premiere. This is coming off of the big finale of last season, which they recap at the start. Unicron, blah, blah, blah. Optimus Prime has lost his memory because he shot all of his Matrix memory, or post-Optimus Prime memories at Unicron and blowed his face up. So the first thing I wanted to bring up here to kick us off is I got to give some real props that I didn't think I'd be giving to Peter Cullen. Because one of the fears I had about the idea of having him perform as Orion Pax, especially now in 2011-2012, is that Peter Cullen often delivers his Optimus Prime lines like a deity superhero. And Orion Pax is not Optimus Prime. And I gotta say, I was really surprised in a happy way that Peter Cullen was giving a really awesomely subdued performance for a lot of his lines. He was quieter. He was meeker. There's still gravitas behind his voice because at the end of the day, he is an older Peter Cullen and it's kind of just ingrained into his chords. But I actually felt he did a much better job than I thought he would. I thought he would be a weak point of this this season premiere. And I don't think he was. I think he actually did a pretty good job. What about you guys?
Yeah, it actually seemed like whereas Prime, kind of the image that I have of him in the recording studio is like almost talking down into a microphone,
yeah,
like booming over it. But then as Orion, it's like he's talking almost up to it. It seems like just in, I don't know if it's even like word choice or things, but it's, you know, Prime is, but Pax is, you know, it's just the tone and everything through it.
Mm-hmm.
That it's amazing. You know, the abilities that the voice actors have, even within a voice, because it's still ultimately Optimus Prime. It's not like he's now voicing a chipmunk.
Yeah.
That it's, you know, the same voice, but it's conferring two drastically different things.
In 2007, you would never have had me believe Peter Cullen's Optimus Prime voice would have a range to move into an Orion Pax realm.
Right. Yeah, it's I'm giving you a command, I'm giving you more of a command, and I'm making a blatant statement out to the stars.
Mm-hmm. And he is a good voice actor. But,
yeah.
You know, just with Optimus Prime's voice in particular, there is a certain kind of stereotype it often falls into, and Prime has been great at breaking it out of that, and this, I think, was a huge step forward again for...
There was one thing that really helped emphasize that as well, was the facial animations they used for him in this episode were much different than what they've been from the previous season.
Oh yeah, because like his eyebrows almost
were a little down. His eyes were a little more wide eyed. He looked younger and more innocent than he has previously, and that was all done with just the general expression on his face throughout the episode. And that combined with Peter's, you know, changing the voice up a little bit, I totally bought it instead of it just being, here's Peter Cullen again doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, it seems like they didn't have him face masked.
Oh, never.
At all.
Never, no.
You know, Prime, whenever it seemed like Prime was giving his lines, it was behind the mask. You know, it'd be like, line, and then serious lines, and now it's like everything is very facially animated. That does make a huge difference.
I'm glad you brought up the facial animations, because I was going to if no one else did. It was a huge boon, specifically, much like with Starscream. I think this really showed that the eyebrows on these models are used to incredible effect. And on Prime, it was just the combination of, as I've often said before, his eyebrow motions, his pupils kind of flitting here and there. The very final scene, actually, when Starscream has his guns pointed at him, I thought Prime had a great little moment of kind of like, just he doesn't know what's going on or why this guy is pointing guns at him. And he doesn't look like terrified. He just kind of looks like, wait, what are you doing? What are you doing? And really played well, I thought. Moving down, Gog, have you got a discussion point you'd like to bring up?
Well, we brought up Prime. How about Megatron? The other half of this odd couple now. We talked a little bit about this at the end, as far as speculation is what we thought was going to happen. Like, why did Megatron jump on the opportunity to bring in Prime? I think we kind of speculated a little bit about at least the possibility of their Prime trying to fully indoctrinate Optimus, or maybe have a second chance at bringing him over to his point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like they went in a little bit of a different direction, like with that, in that Megatron knows that Prime is incorruptible. And he's not even going to try.
Yeah.
So he's going to try to get as much usage out of him as possible until he knows Prime, the way his mind works, will eventually unravel all the lies that Megatron has spun, his web of lies. Mm-hmm. And he needs to try to keep Prime as isolated as possible before that happens. And when that happens, Prime is dead. So we do now know, you know, how this is going to play out. And which leads into the ending, which we can discuss later, which I thought was brilliant. And I thought Megatron overall was is the best of Megatron that we've seen, in my opinion. I think overall I've been much more meh on Megatron as a character than most people have. There just didn't really seem to be a lot to him. He wasn't as vicious and cunning as an animated Megatron. He just kind of walked around, and you know, I always felt like he was meant to be important, but he hasn't really done anything to earn it, in my opinion. Well, and
it just didn't seem like he was almost a second string character quite a bit, because it was Starscream doing a whole bunch of stuff, or this person doing a whole bunch of stuff. And
well,
then
he was dead behind him. I mean, he was dead for a while, and then he came back. But, you know, I was kind of hoping that Megatron would eventually do something or reveal his master plan. And it never really happened. But now that he has something to work with and has a quote unquote plan, with Optimus in his under his wing, if you will, he seems to be executing that plan with a lot of thought and foresight, and kind of weaving his fingers around, you know, trying to keep all the puppets in step with one another on the stage for as long as possible until he gets what he wants. Which also brings out the question too of, I guess we can cover that in a different thing, like what it is and what's going to happen with that, with what Prime is actually decoding. But I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I like this Megatron now that he's getting a chance to use his brain and not just walk around the ship and be pissed at everybody. So, and he's actually being portrayed as a villain with a little bit of cunning, with a little bit of foresight, and it's going to be interesting to see how far he goes to keep this up as long as possible now that some variables have entered into the fray that he wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
Aaron, you got any follow-up on just the Megatron portrayal so far?
Well, it really shows Meg thinking on his feet, because Orion asks, you know, why do we call ourselves Decepticons?
That was a great scene.
and Megatron kind of had a catch, and I wasn't sure if it was like, okay, he's asking this question that I'm ready for, or was that something that was a ad lib type of, well, you know, they hung that on us, and so we took it on us as a badge of honor type of thing. So I don't know. I want to say that Megatron has been thinking the two and three layers deep on things, knowing Orion as he was then, you know, knowing, you know, what are the sort of things that are going to come up early to take care of, you know. It's the same way that he says, you know, keep him locked down. The first one to call him, you know, that was right off the bat, you know, the first Decepticon to call him Prime gets his vocal processors ripped out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's a really good point too, because I was almost wondering when he said that line, if that was actually the one truthful thing he said to Prime in all of that, because he's, you know, this guy isn't being portrayed like G1 Megatron where he's just, yeah, I'm kind of the icon of evil and I'm here to be the bad guy. There's no good in me. Megatron kind of started out as a politically outspoken rebel to a point. And with the story he gave Prime, even if he was lying, I could totally buy that that's his own viewpoint of why he chose the name for the faction.
Absolutely. Like,
so that could really go either way. And that's kind of the way I interpreted it when he spouted that off so quick, is he actually believes that. He's wrapping it in lies, mm-hmm. when it comes to Prime.
He's had that answer in mind probably for millennia and just never had a chance to deliver it since Cybertron.
Just waiting. It's that punchline setup. He's waiting for it before.
Yeah, or he has. That maybe that was part of the speech that where he rallied the original Decepticons around that.
Yeah.
You know, when he was kind of becoming outcast for his opinions. I could see him have given that speech up on a podium when he's trying to find anybody who would listen to him.
Mm-hmm. This episode, I think, really was, as you guys said, a great Megatron episode. I even came up with a way to kind of, because I like how Megatron is being portrayed in the show right now. And I liked how he came into the show as a kind of just deranged, sort of crazy old man. And it seems almost as though, and this may or may not be intentional, that this sort of turn towards a more cunning Megatron might come with the end of Unicron's influence on him. And almost kind of like a reverse of the G1 Galvatron progression, where he's kind of crazy, but now that Unicron's gone, Dark Energon's been kind of purified out of him, he's sort of going back to being what made him so great in the first place in this universe. And I feel like the sight of seeing Orion Pax, or, you know, what is basically Orion Pax, has maybe even spurred him into sort of recalling what it was that made him such a powerful speaker in the history of this canon. And I think that really showed in this episode, as you said, like there were all these moments where he just sounded like a great leader who knows how to answer the questions extremely well. And it was again propelled by Frank Welker doing a fantastic job. I think this is the best Megatron he has ever played. And I mm-hmm. actually wrote a note down saying it's so great that Welker, the original Megatron, finally gets to play a well-written Megatron. It feels very much like a great sort of comeuppance and reward for him. Like, because I've said before, this Megatron feels in a way like if you took G1 Megatron and just aged him several more centuries, this is what would come out the end. And it still feels kind of like that. Like this is like almost like Megatron and Welker's fused reward as being the original Megatron. Now you get to be well written as well. It's great. I really hope this is a sign of Megatron's portrayal for the rest of this show, as long as he's around in it, because I'm really enjoying this. It's a different take. It's like an elderly, wizened Megatron, but in a really cool way. And the body language is great too. When he's around Orion Pax, always walking around with two hands behind his back and having his chest forward and chin up, like just playing the role of the father figure or mentor that he once did play to Orion Pax in the stated past. Fantastic stuff. Welker and Cullen, I think they were two of the more shaky parts at the start of the show, and at the start of season two, they are two of the strongest parts coming out of that. Like, it's fantastic that I am happy that they are in the roles for reasons outside of nostalgia. So, thumbs up. Aaron, have you got... I went to you already, didn't I?
No.
Oh, no, I didn't. I went to you first after Gog dropped his talking point. So give me a talking point, Aaron!
One thing that kind of got me off the bat was the teasers. They kind of fibbed to us a little bit. Mm-hmm. They made the Decepti-Brand moment seem like it was something serious, and then in the episode it was like, yeah, it happened.
Yeah.
Which kind of led on to a couple other things that I think I caught a couple more moments out of the teasers that looked a whole lot more dramatic than what they really were. But that also has the reversal of a moment that wasn't nearly as dramatic, ended up being a whole lot more with RC going turbo crazy on the Viacons.
Oh, you mean just the overall, the badass moment.
Yeah, where, she snaps and jumps back into the Decepticon space bridge and then tears ass through the Decepticon ship, taking out, I think I counted 8 or 10 Viacons before being escorted back off the ship, as Megatron so politely put it.
Yeah, that scene was... I really liked the way that scene was kind of a prelude to what would happen later in the episode, which I think is kind of almost a separate talking point.
Yeah.
And it was also just a really well-directed scene in terms of the visuals. It was exciting.
It was that line, just, we'll be sure to tell the Big O you said hello. Yeah, and walk off into the space bridge. And that was just like, you just pushed a button. You don't realize what you just did.
Yeah.
And then I forget exactly what his line was like. It wasn't an oh crap, but it was a, what was his line?
What, Knockout's line when she drove over
Knockout's
shoulder?
Yeah, Knockout's line. It was
he just dropped one of those pseudo-cuss scrap quotes.
But it was just a great moment of everything kind of coming together and then going wrong.
And also, this really, I think, solidified that RC is pretty much the unspoken second-in-command style character, akin to how many people remember Ironhide in G1.
Yeah.
When the boss isn't there, it's like priority one is get the boss back.
Right.
That scene was also directed so intensely right up to its resolution. It was just this beautiful package of adrenaline and reminded me why I really like how much Prime has grown as a visual show in terms of its action sequences.
Right.
There was this one bit where she's in bike mode, just driving at an angle right up towards the screen, and they're vibrating the camera as she's moving. And I was like, oh, feels like friggin' I want Vin Diesel to just like drop out of the ceiling and jump in on this.
I actually run in that scene right now, and it's great just as a straight up action scene of very kind of kinetic, which is the way that she fights. It's not, you know, bulkhead is, you know, aiming at something and smash, you know, she's jumping off of one to hit another, using them as a shield and just keeps moving. And it's just awesome. The cool effect, slow-mo motions too. Bravo, whoever directed that scene and put it all together.
And great soft focus as well at times. Like, that's another thing the show is doing really well to get away from some of the trappings of TV CG, is they're doing a really good job of playing with the focus and not having just everything in sharp view. It makes it a little bit more cinematic, I'm finding. Gog, how do you feel about RC's moment in here as a fan of this RC?
Oh, I thought it was great. It made perfect sense to me, and I've seen a bit of disagreement as far as whether that scene was appropriate or fit the characters or whatever, but I thought the scene played out brilliantly. And the thing that I like about RC is, you know, and it's not, I wouldn't say it happens all the time, but it's like, I find myself in position where I'm like, oh, if I was in that situation, that's what I would do. And then 2 seconds later, RC's doing it.
Yeah.
It's just like, they're frustrated because they don't know where Prime is. They have no way to track him. They literally, you know, don't even know where to begin. And it's not like they've had a lot of time to really begin either, other than just trying to gather their thoughts and figure out what to do next. And like the whole thing with them stealing that power supply for their space bridge, the Decepticons again, first thing they think of is like, oh, well, we might get a clue as far as where Optimus is, or he might even be there. So like that's what's going on in their mind is we need to find Prime. This is happening. This is our best shot. Let's go. So they go, you know, they're stealing the thing, you know, and Knockout just puts the thought, or at least reinforces it in RC's mind of like, yeah, we got Prime. What are you going to do? What does she do? She's like, I have my chance. I don't know when I'm going to have another. If I'll even have another, I'm going to make the best use of it, whether it's the smartest decision or not, because we don't have anything else. So she dives headfirst into the Decepticon headquarters, not knowing any way to get out or anything. And I don't think that's reckless. I think that's being selfless and, you know, trying to make something out of nothing and taking every last inch that you got because someone you care for is in grave danger. And she nearly accomplished it, except for, you know, she was alone in the Decepticon base and kind of got outwitted. It, you know, for, and, you know, not a knock against her, but no, that scene was amazing. It was, this is RC. Here's all this stuff that's between her and her goal. And damn it, she overcame almost all of it.
Yeah.
until the end.
Well, she's been like she is not a character that would be out of character to even be reckless. I mean, the to me, part of her whole base structure is she's fiercely loyal, she's fiercely independent, and will, you know, do what she thinks is right,
right.
Regardless of the greater tactical scheme. And she's also not an idiot, so you know, like she's got like a lot going for her in terms of being like an Ironhide like character, and it make and so to jump into a space bridge is kind of like, yeah, they're going through the space bridge. Optimus might be right there, and the space bridge possibly will just be open behind me when I get into the ship. What if Optimus was standing right there? She could just grab him and jump back through, you know? Like,
yeah.
There's all kinds of ways that made sense to me. I heard there was a lot of dissent on that scene, and I you know, if you feel one way or not.
I don't understand any of it.
Yeah,
But yeah, I briefly read some of the arguments of saying how ridiculous the scene was in some people's opinion, and I frankly just don't understand. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I just completely disagree with everything that I read. I thought the scene was great. What's going through my mind when I'm watching that is there's an opportunity, take it. And that's exactly what she does. You know, I felt the exact same way back when they had Megatron attached to the life support system and RC is in there and there's Megatron. And I'm thinking like, you could just shoot him right now. And what does RC do?
She shoots him.
And I'm like, yes, this is why I like this character, because she thinks fast, you know? And of course, you know, from a writing perspective, they have to keep it going. So yeah, she didn't get the opportunity to murder Megatron, but it's just, I like the direction that they take her character in that when it comes time to make split second decisions, she oftentimes makes ones that she wouldn't under other writers. And that's not to say that she has a perfect track record with that. Like with the whole Magnetic Gauntlet episode, I thought that was way out of character for her, because Breakdown and Arachnid are sitting there stuck together, and they're just like, whatever.
Arachnid murdered one of my best friends, but we're out.
Yeah. And then like the next episode, they're back to their bitter rivalry again, where neither one of them are going to walk away alive. Like that one episode, I think was a huge misstep for RC. Outside of that, I really like what they've done with the character.
Mm. Yeah, I entirely agree that scene was great, and I similarly had to sit there for a while because I didn't want to go. I tried to avoid reading as many opinions as I could before recording this, just to keep my thoughts pure. And it took me a long time to try to think of, well, what could someone find wrong with that whole scene? And I was like, maybe they feel it does not walk in step with the character development she had when she was trying to kill Starscream, but this was a completely different situation as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah,
so
I still think it was totally organic of a character develop. I say organic because they're robots, huh?
Heyo!
Just get the bad joke out of there. Because it is. It just carries on from, you know, where she is. You know, she's lost someone before in Cliffjumper and the other partner, I don't remember his name,
aww,
and doesn't want to lose those people close to her, and there's a chance that I can go and rescue this person. Why did the other two guys not come along, too? It only makes sense to go after him.
Yeah, and she's also compact enough to actually feasibly pull off that intrusion.
And you know, the couple posts that I read of people that were saying it was way out of character, I guess I can kind of understand what they're saying.
I can understand, but if I consider a viewpoint that I also would entirely disagree with. So
right.
I don't know.
I haven't exactly seen anybody's that's necessarily thrown out a penny and that I'm like, are we watching the same TV show? Maybe you're coming at it from a different direction. But once I started seeing that and the people that were diametrically different, I was just like, I'm just going to enjoy this TV show my own way. And, then talk about it on the internet, I guess.
To move into another talking point that branches right from this, I feel that any doubt about her actions were then, as far as character goes and plot goes, they were even more justified when you reach one of the final scenes where the protagonists mm-hmm. are falling apart. The Autobots and the humans, all of them, are just losing their cohesion because Optimus Prime is no longer there. Arguably, I would not entirely disagree with the idea that it seems strange that his absence for such a short period of time is causing such strife, but I think that the purpose of this, the scene I'm talking about, was to just show you that without Optimus Prime around, they can't function without a leader. And I really loved how it started with them kind of just making snide remarks at each other, and then they're just starting to drop snide remarks on the kids, too. And I was like, this is getting dark, sort of, you know, like the kids are trying to pipe up with their, in any other cartoon, the kids would pipe up and the robots would be all like, the child is right, we should blah, blah. But instead, like, Miko's like, hey, he's right. And RC's all like, well, if Miko thinks it's right, oh, yeah, I'm sure this is a good plan. I was like, wow.
Yeah, but that's also, once again, RC is doing and saying what we're thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But and then Ratchet just like I liked how the Autobots were not like they were actually losing their patience with the kids as well as with each other, and just that scene with so much interpersonal tension and conflict, I thought aside from being a kind of a cool scene, I thought it also very much worked with what RC had just done. It showed that to them their priority one kind of is they want Optimus Prime back,
right?
Because he's the big bot.
One of the lines that I had written down of kind of Bulkhead mocking Ratchet, you know, where Bulkhead got mad, smashed something. Ratchet turns around and Bulkhead just snaps first. What? You needed that? Come on. You know, what we need is Boss Bot back or whatever that follow-up line was. But it's like, wow, that's going from, you know, hey, okay, sorry, I smashed something, I'm a big doofus, to no, I intentionally smashed this because I'm really cheesed off. That,
yeah, it was,
you know,
it was
we don't have guidance.
It was the backbiting that helped, I think. Like, just
They're supposed to be the heroes. They're the good guys that are always happy and chipper and everything works out.
Yeah, just making these very aware comments of like, yeah, they get under your skin, good. You know, like just those moments.
I guess I just took it completely different because, I mean, I agree that there was a lot of tension and everything between the teammates, but like as far as it kind of being like this declaration of the fact that like the team is falling apart, I didn't see that at all. It was just, to me, the way I saw it was, here was their only chance. RC jumped on it and she failed, went through any fault of her own. Regardless, she had her one opportunity to make it work. It didn't work out. And now they're back to square one. They got nothing. And RC is just utterly pissed. She's pissed at herself. She's pissed at the Decepticons. And like Ratchet is like, well, you had to have gotten something we can go on, right? Because this is all we had. And it was just the heat of the moment of, we took a gamble and now we failed and everybody is pissed because we don't know what to do next. Mm-hmm. Like I just didn't see it as like this whole like, oh, the Autobots are falling apart. It was just, and that, I guess that's just coming from, you know, from my perspective of I have plenty of close friends. And you're not a friend with someone until you get into a heated moment where you go back and forth like that.
I don't mean fall apart as in like disband or the team's over. I should justify what I meant. It's like,
well, usually I'm not just saying that to you either, because I've also seen those comments from other people who implied that that's what was happening.
Dude. Oh, no, so, no. This was not the team falling apart, but what I felt was being portrayed is something that I'm not used to. Like, again, this is very much like, this is kind of taking a step past what the expectations are for a kid show. Is usually you don't get to see those moments, those very real moments of, like, you know, when someone, she failed to do what she wanted to do, and then she failed to bring back anything of use. And just to see everyone's temper flare against each other, just for that one moment of just, like, for these 2 minutes, everyone is just pissed at each other. Yeah. Just in a very ugly way. Like, I liked that they showed that, because I was like, yeah, that's real, and that's like kind of the feeling that I think they would be going through. Like, if they just kind of go like, all right, everyone, calm down, let's figure out what to do, I would have been like, all right, it's a cartoon. But this that's what I think really got me into that scene, was just how it felt like these are real characters who are angry, and they are reacting like real people to each other. Yeah. Just for these few minutes. Like,
yeah, that was my kind of what I meant with my slightly snarky comment of, you know, what it's the, you know, these are the good guys doing this. You know, they hardly even got a step ahead in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to consider, hey, you know, the grand idea is we're going to let the bad guys get their way and then try and snag it at the end. You know, things went very poorly for the Autobots, and that's just odd to see. And what is still, I mean, as much as we like to say that this is something that's, you know, aimed more at us, it's still a kid show on a kid's network. And they're playing plot deep, like Serenity, Firefly level of, you know what, you're going to have to earn this, not, you know, story of the week style it.
And it also wasn't too overt either. Like, it was, if it had been like, you know what, the Autobots are over, like stated in the show.
Yeah. That's one reason I appreciated what had happened, because it happened and then it was over. Like, it was just a single scene, and it was a heated moment. It wasn't this whole episode dedicated to, oh, here's the Autobots, look at them, they can't do anything without Prime. You know, if that had been it, my opinion of this episode would have varied greatly from what it is now. But it was just, here's RC. She, you know, she failed at her mission. She's pissed. Other people are pissed because now they got nothing. And it's just, the tension is building. They're snapping at each other. And it was, but that's a moment that I think everyone can find themselves in with the people that are closest to them once in a while.
Yeah.
I mean,
and I could really see even the tone of how this one feels changed depending on how part two goes. Because if they start out in the same funk or worse, like if it's a couple days later and everybody's been backbiting on each other, I think that it could really change kind of the flavor of this one, of going from being a, oh, we're upset at the situation, to, you know, well, you know, Bumblebee went blah, 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 at me at the wrong time this time, and that's why I socked him in the mouth or grill plate or whatever. I think that how the next episode goes can really change kind of the flavor at the end here.
Also, I think we are pretty much on a similar wavelength. I had no idea people were taking that as a team fall apart, as in the end of the Autobots kind of moment.
Oh yeah, yeah. People had made the comment that it was poor writing. The Autobots should not be portrayed as being completely useless without Prime.
Yeah, like when I say the protagonist falling apart, I mean emotionally falling apart for a moment.
Right.
I certainly don't mean. Like, that is definitely, like, you know, if you feel that way, like, don't overreact if, like, you know, your parents fight or something, because that's not how a bond as deep as a cartoon faction will break apart, like not in a well-written cartoon. And, the whole reason why that scene worked is because it was, we got to see a spur-of-the-moment flare-up of emotion and anger, I think that was beautiful, because it was also a great way to end part one of a two-parter, because it ends it on this crisis down moment where you're like, well, how will, like, this is, it's classic writing. They are now facing these growing odds, and the odds are growing against them even just within their own base, because the government might shut them down. Fowler can't protect them forever. They're kind of at each other's throats for this moment, in a way that we haven't seen before. I'm glad that
they show tension between them, because if it was just like, oh, it's Prime mission, what are we going to do? And they just drop a plan and go do it. You know, the fact that one of them has already died. We had Cliffjumper die.
Yeah.
And now their leader is on the verge of the same thing happening. And the fact that some people don't necessarily show complete tact and utter cool-headedness during all this makes me believe that, they actually have personalities, and I can believe that these exist as characters and not just living plot devices.
Yeah, yeah, they're mm-hmm. living, rounded characters, and it's also completely in tune with what we've seen for all of season one.
Right, and the scene lasted literally like a minute, and it was over. Like it wasn't a big deal. It was just here's a hot moment between comrades, and that stuff happens all the time. So, like, I don't know, like I didn't have a problem with any of that. I thought it worked well, and it helped drive, you know, them trying to figure out what to do next.
Yeah, like my whole reaction to it was, my first time I watched it, I was like, "Ooh, it's kind of uncomfortable." The second time I watched it, and I was like, "Yeah, that completely works for, you know, we've said it umpteen times now. The reasons stated before." I think that scene was, that's why I added it to my notes. That scene was notable enough, I felt, to be a talking point for only good reasons. I liked it a lot. Moving on from there, Gog, have you got another talking point for us to talk about?
Yeah, let's talk about Starscream.
Yeah.
I got all excited at the end of the episode.
Yeah. I mean, we all knew he was going to show up eventually, especially since I think it was you when you went to New York Comic Con when you said that the writers had said that he was probably going to show up sooner than we thought. Well, he definitely did.
Way sooner than I thought.
The season premiere. I like the potential here, and we don't know anything yet, except for, you know, obviously Prime asking questions. Megatron doesn't like the fact that Prime is asking questions, so he gives him as short and to the point answers as possible, just to enough to satiate his curiosity and get him moving along with his mission of decoding whatever that stuff is that he's decoding, the Iacon code or whatever. But, you know, Prime asks, well, he's like, yeah, there's something that's bothering me. You're second in command, Starscream. What happened with him? Oh, he's dead. Don't worry about it. You know, he died a long time ago. It's in the past. We don't talk about that. And you know, here we are now, face to face. This is going to be interesting, and I like what they're doing with Starscream here, because they. I think we all knew that Starscream was going to be a bit of a wild card, and this is him being a wild card ass wild card.
Yeah.
Because he's not showing up, you know, just, here's the battle. Oh, so here comes Starscream just, you know, shooting us in the back. This is psychological wild card. And this is going to be really, really interesting, I think. And I hope they do something more with Starscream than just go down the easy road, because he's in a very unique position here, and like even more unique than with animated Starscream, because I think there's been a lot of parallels between this Starscream and animated, especially now that he's been, you know, for the most part banished from the Decepticons. The same thing happened in animated, except for it was more of just like Starscream just keeps showing up trying to kill Megatron out of revenge.
Yeah,
live out his goal to lead the Decepticons. With here, it's more of a Starscream left of his own free will and has a bone to pick with both the Autobots and the Decepticons, and he is now in a perfect position to just throw the proverbial wrench into the giant ass gear that is this plan that Megatron already knows is just slowly tearing at the seams, and he has to keep it patched as long as he can. And it's not going to take long for Starscream to know that, and for him to just completely throw the whole thing into utter chaos. And that is what I want to happen. I don't want it to just be Starscream shows up and he makes Optimus doubt. I want chaos. I want Megatron trying to just keep this thing held up with thumbtacks, and here comes Starscream, and it just explodes in ways we don't even imagine. And maybe I'm asking for a little too much. Maybe I'm giving the writers a little too much credit. But the minute I saw Starscream walk into Prime's room and then meet face to face, I'm like, yes, I want it to hit the fan, and I want it to go everywhere. I don't even want to see the whites on the walls.
Well, that was a perfect way to end this episode. Because it means that they're not going to drag out Megatron's subterfuge at all. As they've done many times in Prime, they're just, hey, I think it'd be great if they did. Oh, they did it. You know, like they don't wait too long to do something.
Not when Dragon Ball Z-ing it up.
Yeah. And
eight episodes of, it almost happened.
And whatever.
Because I thought that I didn't think it was going to end the way that it did because of the last moment save by Soundwave.
Yeah, and that was a great way to almost mislead what was going to happen. That's why when they finished, I was like, well, how's this episode going to end? They cut to outside with a squadron of flying Viacons. I'm like, oh, I get it. Like, you see that, and then you see the glint. I'm like, oh, here we go. It's going to start. And I loved his subterfuge, too. Like, I kind of felt almost the implication that this isn't the first time he's snuck on board the ship by following the flying drones in just to, like, get himself some more Energon. And I loved also how his way of getting Energon is just to walk up to the guards and then just go, like, what do you mean, shoot me? I'm back with the Decepticons. Didn't you hear anything?
Did you get the memo?
Yeah, just dressing TPS them down. Report? And then he waits for, like, a beat and then just kills them. I love it.
I love how... From episode one to season two, episode one, Starscream's primary weapons are his fingers.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like it. It's just like he's not shooting people in the back or anything. This Starscream will, I mean, yeah, he's not going to telegraph the fact that he's about to cut your head off. But when he does it, he's still going to face you.
Yeah.
And it's just...
Well, he walked right up to these guys, just stood there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. And it's just like he doesn't use the missiles on his arm, which is what... Or the null rays or whatever is in that typical arm position that Starscream is known for. He's got him there, but this Starscream will walk right up to your face and just slit your throat with his fingertips. And I love it.
Yeah, right after he's talked to you and said, hey, what's up, buddy? Like, that's what I like about it, is he's still kind of silver-tongued, but in a much different way. In, like, a much much more threatening way, I find, as well. This Starscream, like, he's among three of the greatest Starscreams, the other ones being, of course, Armada and Animated. And I think what makes this one different is that, because Armada Starscream became noble by the end, Animated Starscream was just nefarious to the end, but in a very potent and threatening way. I like that this Starscream, like, right from episode one, he's kind of been, like, he's not really out to backstab anyone as an instinct. It's kind of like he's been forced into it. It's like you take the G1 Starscream caricature, this Starscream, he's become that, but he has a reason behind it. He's been forced to be this guy who's using utter subterfuge and slyness because everyone has turned on him for one reason or another, and not entirely due to his own actions. That's what I really like about him. He's like, he's kind of relatable, and you kind of feel sorry for him, especially after his final episodes in season one, but not to the point where you could ever think of him as being a protagonist. Like, he's still not the nicest guy, but I like his take on the Starscream caricature, and I definitely want to see what happens next episode with that perfect case of everything going wrong.
You see a little bit in the preview. I mean, not even enough to be really a spoiler. Uh-huh. You just see some Viacons at some point they enter the room and Starscream flies away and escapes. Mm. What I want to know is what we haven't seen. What the exchange of word
what
is?
Was this, said.
What was said? what seeds is Starscream going to sow?
Yeah,
you know, that's what I want to know.
It's he's also got a great voice actor. Doing a great job on him. I was really happy that Starscream is back, because this episode really felt like every element I really liked in season one was coming back right away. It's like Soundwave gets to be awesome, Starscream is back, Megatron and Prime are at their best, RC has a badass moment. It really was, I think, a strong dosage of the key ingredients. Aaron, have you got another place to take us?
One thing I did like was the little nod to other shows.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ratchet had a line at, you know, they're going to shut us down, whatever, you know, they'll ship us off to some island or blast us into space, you know. That's Rescue Bots is they're stuck on, not stuck
I was
on,
wondering
but
about
they're
the
on
island.
An island. And then blasting into space is, of course, you know, movie three. So yeah. I had a good solid, I see what you did there.
I loved his delivery on that one, too, because, like, this is kind of calling back to that discussion we just had, but I loved how when he said shoot us into space, he's like, that'd be a welcome relief. I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
He's not happy.
Yeah. But it was just a good split second moment of kind of hanging the lantern on that.
No, yeah. No, that was really cool. I completely
I didn't find any other hidden references throughout the episode. And I was kind of trying to watch for it because they've done a really good job of knowing their history.
You know what I realized while watching this episode a few times? This is so small, it doesn't really warrant its own thing, but I think I finally figured out what the flying Viacons are, and they actually kind of look like the ground Viacons, but with wings attached.
That's actually another note that I had, that that I was amazed at how good that looks, especially now since, spoiler for the next full WTF episode, I have a Viacon in hand.
Yeah.
And have fiddled with it very much.
I see how they could...
He's right here.
I see how they could do a really easy remold, or not easy, but a simple, you know, additional parts molding on the existing Viacons to do the flying ones.
Because it was the, you know, the whole body is the same. It's just instead of wheels up on the shoulders, it's wings and a couple of wheelie panely, you know, car panel bits become car bits. And even in their alt mode as vehicle, it looks like, almost looks like the old aero cars that you'd always see in the, like the 50s and 60s, you know, in the future, you'll have a car that you just back into your garage, and look, you've got wings.
Maybe I should buy another bunch of expensive Japanese Viacons and start adding wings to them. That would be so smart.
But no, I mean, because I specifically did a slow bit as Starscream came in and looked at the transformation just to see that. And I'm like, yeah, that's... It's not like they're swapping out the models or anything, because there's enough different in there that, you know, it's not them being lazy or anything, but it really makes me wonder, between that and the fact that we had two or three Viacons with lines in this episode, that how much of them are drones, or
it's almost
protoformish, in that, you know,
I think they
haven't earned a name yet, or
I think we can more or less confirm these guys are not drones. These are living things. Like, it's if they end up being considered to be drones, I will be a little bit disappointed, because
I think they were referred to drones in the pilot, but that could easily be explained away or whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But,
right.
And I mean, drones is also a term you could use just as a demeaning way to refer
exactly,
to them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, I am like 90% sure Viacons are living things, which makes the series a million times darker. But yeah, I'm actually feeling like it's a whole lot less impossible that we may get some flying Viacon toys now. So,
yeah. Well, that's, I mean, crossed. their lack of self-identity kind of was where I was going with the protoform, and kind of the animated idea of, maybe not protoform, but the like the chassis.
Oh, the template chassis.
Template. That was more the word of, you know, there's, you know, how many different versions of Bumblebee that are basically the same, you know, if it's something that's similar and they all just pick the same head and paint scheme conveniently.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, that's, I was surprised that someone else had picked that out, because I was staring at those vehicle modes. I have another plot point to bring up. The stuff that Orion Pax, as he believes himself to be, is working on are apparently coordinates, which, as I understand it, implies that Cybertron actually knowingly sent stuff to Earth and possibly other planets and kept records of where it all was in case they needed it.
That was part of the deal with Energon, right? That the sides were ferreting away these supplies and trying to keep them from the others.
Yeah,
Energon was on Earth.
This goes as far as
the whole Unicron thing.
This goes as far as outright cargo, and possibly weapons, if not even cultural items. And I think that this kind of helps make it less weird how many things landed on Earth in season one, because now if there were records dating back to the Great War of Cybertron of Earth coordinates where they were planning to have things touch down, it's like, all right, that makes it seem less weird that so much stuff crash landed on Earth.
Yeah, then there's potentially fights in orbit or in the solar system or things like that that could lead to all that debris getting to us, not just like, another space bridge randomly opened up with it set to default coordinates, which is a little blue and green dumping ground.
And my other hope is that this might lead to one of my favorite things I've seen in IDW's comic books, which is the idea that the Transformers, you know, the Cybertronian race, is actually kind of callous in terms of not really respecting a lot of the rest of the galaxy. I'm kind of hoping we might get to see some episodes of other alien civilizations doing the thing from the IDW books where it's like, oh, it's Cybertronians. Don't let them on the planet. They're frigging crazy. They decided to use the entire universe as a dumping ground for cargo and weaponry, and they bring their fight wherever they go. I'm hoping this could maybe lead to some, at least an episode kind of showing something like that, because that's one of my favorite aspects of IDW storytelling, is bringing that into it, that there's a reason why you don't often see other alien races, because they don't want to be anywhere near these people.
Yeah, I've got the feeling that'd be more a season 3 or 4 deal, because getting away from Earth is going to be a big jump.
They said season 2 is going to ditch Earth.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, they've already talked about, you know, going to Cybertron to use the key to Vector Sigma to get Prime's memory back. So that's to Cybertron to play the we're doing what we're saying, but not in the way that you think we're saying.
I don't know. What if we go to Cybertron and suddenly there's like a Skuckzoid chilling out there? I was working the whole G1 season 3 thing of like random aliens that are all Transformer sized.
Yeah,
I think it could happen. I'm not going to be angry if it doesn't, but it's one of those things where I feel like a seed is in place to allow for it.
Yeah.
Gog, did you have any speculations on this little plot point of Cybertron knowingly planting stuff?
It could go either way. I mean, I get where you're coming from as far as it gives a reason of why there's all this stuff here, and if it ends up being that, if they even hit so much as hint at it or give a reason for something like that, then I think it'll be worthwhile. I mean, otherwise, if it's just yet another random occurrence of Cybertron stuff on Earth, like, well, they didn't really know it was also Unicron here, and all this other stuff kind of hit, you know, scraplets and weapons and chips and stuff. And then, oh yeah, and on top of that, Cybertronians thousands of years ago happened to come here and hide stuff, and they also hid their energon deposits later in the war. It could go either way for me. I just want to see how it plays out, and then judge it accordingly. On its own merit. But it could go either way for me. But if the writers are smart enough to know that people were joking around a lot about this, you know, on the boards, on several different podcasts I've heard, just on Twitter in general, at this point it's become a running joke. It's not something that really takes any huge amount of enjoyment of the show away from me overall. It is still something that even for a few seconds here and there, it does take me out of the show.
Yeah.
But they could spin it as far as making this whole thing like at least a throwaway line, kind of like what Aaron said about, like, yeah, there were battles that revolved around this stuff, and some of that stuff is the remnants of that they found so far. I could buy that, and then everything's fine.
Yeah, that was actually part of my note, was, okay, using Orion Pax as a code breaker, you know, nice play, get the librarian guy to be working on that, and then plot convenience of the locations only being on Earth so far, you know, because Earth is where we are in the story, so that's got to be where it is. But at the same time, you know, I had the moment, but then, you know, again, it kicks back to, oh yeah, this is a TV show for kids, you know, you gotta do that. And especially, you know, because, oh well, it's coordinates on the planet Junk of where this stuff is.
That would help.
Okay,
me.
Why does anybody care?
You show at least one other planet at some point in the series being stricken with just as much Cybertronian detritus. Yeah. I think it would really enhance that plot point in a positive way.
The only other problem I have with this whole thing is that it almost seems to be yet another item chase MacGuffin, and we've gotten a bunch of those. I mean, granted, most of them have only lasted a single episode, but at the same time, that's also kind of bad, because it's just like, what? And we've discussed this, you know, ad nauseum in the past, but. Mm. It's like, what Cybertronian artifact randomly on Earth is going to be the focus of the episode this week?
And now they have a list of coordinates.
And now they have a list of coordinates. And it's, well, I'd much rather see the focus. And that's not to say it won't be, because we got some of that this episode, and all signs point to we're going to get that at least for a little bit in this arc. But I'd like to see the focus be just character stuff, and I don't want it to be an item chase. We've gotten that I mean, if you're going to do it, save it for something epic, but just give us character moments, give us character story, and let the plot revolve around the story of the characters and not, you know, what item they're going to try to, which the factions are going to try to beat each other to once they both suddenly get the coordinates.
Yeah, my quick momentary thought of how that could work out well of having, okay, we got coordinates we got to get to is, you know, Orion now knows that, hey, there's something up with this. And maybe as he's starting to lean into this idea, he says something along the lines of, yeah, you know, there are these coordinates, but you really need somebody that can break it to get into it. Yeah. And so then he can get out of his seclusion now that he knows that, you know, Starscream isn't dead. Megatron's hiding something from him, and maybe use that to be able to push that part of the story forward to have, you know, quicker impact, like what we've been saying that Prime's doing, rather than, you know, Orion spends two episodes digging deeper and finds that there's these sanitized data tracks, instead making it very proactive.
Well, even in the worst case scenario, if this thing takes as long as it possibly can, it'll still be done in the next two episodes, I think. So, I think that's a nice kind of personal safety net on the show, is they not only have a track record for keeping things kind of moving, and or at least not having lingering plot points for super long, or, you know, very key critical ones, and Orion Pax, I believe, is a three-parter. So we there's the window of time for them to delay stuff is already short anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful that there's not going to be any dragginess in that stuff. Gog, have you got another talking point you'd like to bring up?
Is it my turn already? Oh, let me think. I guess we'll go with Miko again. Mm-hmm. That's kind of an easy one. Yeah, she kind of worthless still. Like, you know, she makes the argument like she's like everyone else around her is having this heated argument as far as what actions could be taken to, you know, save Prime or whatever it is, their argument at that time. And here's Miko out of the blue. Is that even a word? Like, yes, Miko, it is. Thanks for freaking contributing to the scene. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Guys, you know,
her only contribution is, yeah, I don't even have a grasp of this language.
I mean, she only had, I think, three lines in this entire episode.
I know, and every one of them was completely worthless.
Yeah.
The exception of the one saying that Jack's idea was a good idea, which then led to RC thinking, like, exactly what we're all saying, like, oh, RC, yeah. I mean, or Miko.
Yeah, Miko thinks it's a good idea. All right, yeah. Pursue that, someone.
Yeah.
Well, you know you're doing bad when Raph has less lines than you and does more?
That is absolutely true. And the thing is, I like what they're doing with Jack. And I mean, I guess to a point, I always have for the most part. But it's just with Miko, like, I wish there was something more there. Like, it would be great for that character if they started off with her being annoying and then give her legitimate development so that we can go back and look and be like, wow, look at what that character was and then look at what she's become.
Yeah.
And here we are, the first episode of season two, and it's like, no, there's been no development in Miko's character at all. None. She is a completely flat character who is totally predictable.
And Raph too. I mean, Raph's only real line is like, hey, Ratchet, are you supercharging that? Yup.
Yeah, but okay. At least he's not.
Yeah, he's going to put a turbo on that thing.
Yeah, I mean, since they've kind of taken, or at least in the scenes where he's not doing his super hacking, he's still bearable.
Yeah.
I mean, but you compare that to Jack and look at his character in the pilot versus look at where he is now.
Right.
I mean, his character was, you know, yeah, like, giant robots are cool, but it's also a war. I have literally nothing to contribute. I'm only going to end up getting myself or those around me killed. Like, I think it's really cool and all, but I have to think about myself and yada, yada, yada. Compared to now, where I have a stake in this. Everyone I know and love has a stake in this. I feel like I have to contribute something, even if it puts my life on the danger for the sake of others. And that's a, I mean, again, maybe I'm exaggerating that a bit or giving him a bit too much credit, but it's, if you look at the bullet points, at the very least, that's where his character is, and they've done a good job of leading him to point A to point B, in my opinion. But it's like I want them to do something like that with Miko, because I don't want to be annoyed every time she's on the screen. It's not like I roll my eyes or anything, but I'm just like, yep, that was a Miko line, all right.
Well, yeah. I think the tough thing is that you've got so many characters to develop. That, I mean, if we're talking Autobots and the kids, that's 8 characters to try and give time to. And I'm hoping that something later on, because we've got 3 Orion Pax episodes and then Operation Bumblebee Part 1.
That word
which makes me think there's going to be a Part 2.
Well, yeah,
I disagree with that completely. I think you're saying 8 characters, like, compared to past Transformers shows, like, that's nothing. Like, it's a very small cast. Look at every single episode where Miko played a substantial role. Like,
right.
There's always at least some things that they could do, even if it's small.
They've tried. Like, you could at least see them trying to do things with her. Like, in the next episode,
she's right back to where she is. I don't disagree with that.
I'm just saying, like, it seems like the writing team is not unaware of Miko's flatness. And it seems like
I'm just afraid, though, that flatness is the character that they've established for comic relief, and that's all they intend to do with her. I don't think that the writers are oblivious to the character that they're writing, not at all, because they're doing a good job with that with some of the other characters. They have to be completely aware of what they're doing. I'm just afraid that that's the character that they've, much like with animated Bumblebee. That was the character animated Bumblebee was supposed to be. Even when he learned lessons, that role still needed to be fulfilled because that's who he was. And I'm afraid that that's what they've done with Miko. They've kind of pigeonholed her into being like, yeah, she's just going to kind of say the silly things and everybody's going to love her. But at least, you know, from most of the discussion I've seen online and people's comments about her, yeah, I mean, there are definitely some Miko fans out there, but most of the people that I've seen watch the show and comment on it seem to just be like, yep, there's Miko again. And maybe that's coming from the adult perspective, and maybe the kids love Miko, and she's accomplishing exactly what she's supposed to. That is a possibility.
What it feels like to me is, just going off what I said, it feels like the writers, like, they have tried to do episodes where she gets a little bit deeper. They tried to give her a moment here and there, especially, you know, in terms of when she's having a character moment with Bulkhead. They've tried to give her moments that push her a little bit deeper. And to me, it feels like right now it's like they have tried to do things, but for whatever reason or another, it hasn't taken on the writing end. And it feels maybe like she's, for now, much like Raph, kind of been left behind by the other characters who are progressing farther.
I also think part of the problem is they wrote both of those characters, kind of started them out in a corner.
Yeah, yeah. Because
if you have a big moment for Miko, you know, the only way you're going to have something hit and stick, it's going to seem like a big change to her character, because she's the whoops, really weird metal, blah, 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 woo, take a picture character. And I think if you're to make a change away from that, it would have to be something drastic that maybe, I think that's kind of where I was going with the whole lot of characters there, is you'd almost have to have a real character episode where something really serious happens. And with the museum episode, she kind of had the chance for that.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it would have to be like, well, something.
The episode in the mine,
Rock,
a perfect example.
Rock, was it Rock Bottom, right?
Yeah,
Rock
Bottom.
Like that has easily been the best Miko episode so far.
Yeah.
Right.
And so she's had her moments. She's had her chances. That's why I'm saying it certainly feels like somebody wants to do this great growth with her, but it feels like they're either waiting for some checkpoint to happen before they do it, or they were starting to do it and then kind of step back.
Yeah,
and we're like,
seems like
we
it
can't,
got stepped yeah cut
we,
back
we can't,
kind
we can't,
of right at the end.
Yeah, we can't nullify the caricature yet. We need it for this next little while.
And I don't think Miko is a lost cause.
I just hope that
eventually they do something with her and make me
maybe the next Miko ep ends up being, look, you know, between this, and this, I've got to change type of thing. Maybe that's kind of what they're waiting for, is to kind of stack it up. Because Jack, it seems like they've gone stepwise. Little by little by little, he's changed.
Yeah, yeah.
Miko's had the opportunities, and Raph has been a super hacker, and
Raph more so feel, like I said, they feel like they've been left behind for now. Like they're for whatever reason, there are many characters who have been made deep. They've been given a whole lot of growth, and then there are some characters who kind of just it happens in any show with an ensemble. There are characters who often end up moving a lot faster than some other characters, and it feels like Miko and Raph are two of those characters who got left several steps behind everyone else at this point in the series. And I hope I don't think it's a lost cause either. I think they can catch up. Just has to do with how this season is assembled and whether the writers want to put the work into making them catch up, or if they're just going to continue driving these other characters forward. Man, that was a Miko topic.
Yeah.
Aaron, have you got another talking point for us?
Kind of stepped around a little bit, but Soundwave turned up the creepy a notch or two for this episode. Just when you think he can't get any more spooky, he does.
Explain.
The biggest thing was like showing, RC when she was rampaging, and as she's going to go after him, he knows that he's got to keep Orion from seeing any of this stuff and has to get her off the ship, and just doesn't even flinch, stands there, and then you see his screen face light up for space bridge equations, apparently, and opens up this, what still amounts to being a dimensional rip in space-time inches from his face, and doesn't even, take a step back.
Oh, just yes.
There's a space bridge here. She can't get through it, whatever. But still, I think any other character would have been like, okay, I'm going to make the space bridge and then take a step back.
Well, that was actually one of my notes, was Soundwave getting another awesome moment himself.
Yeah.
Because I mean, aside from the fact that just the whole way that his moment there played out, I felt was fantastic. Just the standing there unmotionless, as you said, the equations lighting up on his face. And then when Orion Pax comes around the corner, he just glances and just walks away from him without acknowledging him.
Again, he's not talked yet, but it was like the kind of turn back, turn forward was like a meh.
That's like, yeah, whatever. Orion Pax, like, you're not important to my current task. And I also like it was to me another level of awesome for Soundwave, because it's kind of like, guess what? When you're on the ship with Soundwave, Soundwave is even more powerful because he kind of runs the ship.
Right.
And perhaps this isn't bound to the ship, because they've opened space bridges elsewhere, but I love the idea that if you're on the ship, you kind of can't touch Soundwave, because if he sees you coming, he'll just friggin' open a dimensional portal in front of wherever you are. It's like, you want to touch me, you got to walk through that.
Yeah.
I love that. And also just the final touch of also throwing her into the Arctic, which we know as being one of the worst environments on the entire planet for a Cybertronian to be stuck in.
Right. Yeah, my thought with that is, it's like, yeah, chances are it's not going to kill RC, but if I have to put her anywhere, might as well be there just in case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great. It was like this little multi-layered thing. And again, like, I know that the argument has been Soundwave has these moments of awesome and little else, but I still get these... I get these feelings of just very small hints of character through these things. And a great example is that scene where he shows no fear. He escorts you off the ship by literally opening a space bridge in front of you as you're attacking him. And then, top it all off, drops you in the Arctic.
Yeah. I have hope now that, given the end of the season finale and what he's done in the season premiere now, that maybe the writers have gotten more of a grasp on who Soundwave is and what they want to do with him, and now we're going to see them using him more often. Because, mm-hmm. like, in the beginning, like, the first season, it was just more of, like, yeah, he's fiercely loyal to Megatron. He's going to be a thorn in Starscream's side, because Starscream wants to, obviously, get Megatron out of the picture, and Soundwave is always over his shoulder, and he can't do anything blatantly obvious, or it's going to be trouble. And that was about the extent of what we got with Soundwave. And now that, like I said, the last couple episodes have really kind of cemented him, not necessarily in a different light, but just more than just the surveillance guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I get the feeling now that the writers are like, yeah, okay, we kind of know what we're gonna do with this character who can't talk. So let's have a little bit of fun with it.
Yeah, he's not a second in command. He's not like part of the hierarchy. He's just, I love that he's kind of just this force that exists wherever Megatron is.
Yeah, well, your line there of him being able to control the ship kind of made me think, I wonder if there's more to it than that, because Megatron always says, you know, anything that happens here, I know about. Soundwave has shown that he's, you know, undyingly or absolutely faithful to Megatron. So I wonder if there is integration. Maybe that's why he can't talk, but he displays everything that happens on the ship on his face. Maybe he's a drone that has a drone as part of the ship.
I don't know. Like I still think he's a full-on character, but I think there's a huge amount of...
I'm not saying that he's not a character, but I wonder how much of that is kind of like, you know, the animated idea of Perceptor.
Oh,
that,
stripping away components.
You know,
stripping away
components so that I can, you know... I had personality and played tunes, but instead I ripped all of that out to plug in the cross patch board for the ship.
I don't know if he's like quite as in the same vein as animated Perceptor, but I feel that there is somewhere in this show's future a fantastic episode showing exactly why Soundwave is what he is right now. I feel like that's one of those episodes that is, it feels like it's in the show's future. Like that's mm-hmm. going to be a big episode, is why is Soundwave so loyal to Megatron? But yeah, that was a great moment for Soundwave. It felt as was said, it felt a lot more confident and stronger in showing what he can do. Definitely makes me really eager to get a hold of the toy.
It's a good toy.
Every time I see him just standing there, I'm like, that's, even if the toy wasn't poseable and could just turn into a robot, I think I'd be happy with it. Because that's all I need him to do, is just stand in the background and look really, really spooky. Let's see, what do I have here for another talking point? I have a kind of two-part one about the key to Vector Sigma. The first part being just a small note that we now know that the key to Vector Sigma wasn't just given to Jack in confidence. It's also now apparently bound to his genetic signature, to the point where he's the only one who can use it, because Prime gave it to him. Which I had to think about for a little while, because I was like, it seems weird at first for Prime to potentially put him at so much risk or use him as almost a safety net, in that he's not a Cybertronian, so it's a lot more work to get him to use the key to Vector Sigma. At the same time, Jack in this episode displayed, you know, as part of his character growth, he was making decisions by the end of the episode. He was making calls that were logical choices of action. And I think that it the whole nature of what the key to Vector Sigma is a show of huge amount of trust on Optimus Prime's part. The follow-up to this being that the key to the Vector Sigma itself is apparently mystical as far as your average Cybertronian is concerned in what it is capable of, and possibly contains Optimus Prime's memories, which sort of reminded me of the Ironhide miniseries that IDW did, in that there was somewhere that was keeping backups of Transformer minds. But that they didn't go very deep into it, but it was kind of neat, the little hints they gave here and there as to the nature of Vector Sigma in this show.
I kind of wonder if Vector Sigma is more a backup of the Matrix than necessarily a Transformer.
Oh, yes. I think it would definitely be a copy of what was in the Matrix, given that it's more so about what was lost when the Matrix emptied itself, rather than just memories specifically. But it's going to be interesting to see what they make Vector Sigma look like, how they're going to represent it, like how deep into the mysticism they're going to go. We know that they are totally willing to dive into some original 13 kind of ish with this. So I'm kind of excited to see the Vector Sigma involvement. I hope it's not going to be too common, because much like Unicron, Vector Sigma is something that is great when it shows up once in a while, but could probably really grate on someone if it's going to show up constantly. I just hope it's going to be delivered with some gravitas that is suiting the way it's been presented so far. Any other thoughts on Vector Sigma's or the key to Vector Sigma's role thus far, or is it kind of just there?
It's just there until what appears to be next episode, we see what's really going on Cybertron,
Mm-hmm.
It's the thing that's going to be the plot driver.
I hope there's just like all the zombies are being led by this one zombie who used to be a gas station worker, like in Land of the Dead. All the zombies have just taken over Cybertron and turned it into a utopia, and then they get mad when all these living things show up. It'd be,
I could have done without the comment of the whole biosignature thing, because it
was weird.
It doesn't make any sense either, because it's like, why would this Cybertronian artifact be, it's able to link with an alien's DNA? Like, Transformers don't even have DNA, so why would that even happen? It just seems more of a, it was a way for them to explain, like, why Jack has to be the one to do it.
Last time we had the Cybertronian human reaction, it fired all the data off into space, and Bulkhead managed to be in the wrong place.
Well, I would have much rather see the writing just be like, well, Jack, like, because obviously June was very objective. She's like, Jackson Darby, you are not going to another planet or whatever, which was a pretty funny line. But instead of them saying, like, have given him his moment where he's like, Mom, I kind of have to do this to help save, you know, the guy who defended our planet. Like, instead of that, it's like Ratchet's like, nope, he has to, because it's kind of linked to his DNA, so he doesn't have a choice. Like, and I don't think that they had planned that when Optimus gave him the key at the end of the first season. Like, there was no little hint or anything that any, like they could have even given like a little glimmer where it kind of scanned him, happened.
It reformatted size. It went from being very large to being very small. So maybe it did some sort of recognition.
I don't think for a second
that they had planned when Optimus gave him that it was scanning him and linking to his biosignature. I just get the impression that that's something that they kind of threw in because they were sitting around the table like, well, we have to have a reason why Jack has to be the one. So, okay, here it is. This is kind of an easy one to throw away line. But it's – I would have much rather that – it felt very odd to me. I don't think it makes a lot of sense in the grand scheme of what the key is. Like, you know, at least it
depowers the moment, because as you said, instead of making this Jack's initiative – It almost gives him an excuse not to have the initiative by going like, also the pseudoscience says he has to.
Right.
And instead of making it character driven, it does make it plot device driven.
Right. So they could have accomplished the exact same thing with Jack just looking at the odds or looking at the stakes and making the decision on his own versus, like you said, the pseudoscience making it for him.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, it's one of those things to where in a few episodes from now, we won't care because either way, the result would have been the same. So it was just a minor little nitpick on my thought. I'm like, that was totally an afterthought that was really over explained.
Oh, yeah. The way that it came up, it's why in my notes I wrote seems odd, because it definitely opens up all these avenues of discussion and avenues of intent between characters that seem too deep for the show to want to delve into them.
Yeah, well, I mean, Miko says so that makes you like an honorary prime.
Yeah, and I was like, if he goes to Robot Heaven, like in Revenge of the Fall, and I'm putting this clipboard down for a few seconds.
Yeah,
pick it up again.
So, you know, I'm pretty sure they knew where they were going when they handed that to him, the writers at least, at the end of the last season, because I mean, from the way that everything seemed, they knew pretty much that the next season was going to happen. And so they, you know, planted that there to carry over. But I don't know. It's a very, you know, we keep saying it, a very MacGuffin-y thing. It's the plot driver. And there's, again, it's got to go back to, you know, we do a good job of deconstructing this thing. You know, you got to also realize that, you know, they put the kids in the show because the kids are watching the show, so it gives the whatever 8 to 14 year old the connection into this world. And as the kid is the connection, then you have to have them as part of the show.
Wouldn't it be stronger if like Jack was, like we said, like if Jack was the one just, and it works with the rest of the way his character has been developing. Like if he's the one who just said, "No, listen, I have to go and I have to do it."
Right, but also at a certain point, Mom is going to tell the 16-year-old No.
Yeah, but guess what? But Jack already did that in the season finale last year.
Hey, his mom said,
"You're getting in the car." Jack said, "I'm not." Yeah. So, I mean, he's already shown the willingness to tell his mom when the situation comes around that, "I'm sorry, I'm not a child. I might be 16, but I'm also a little mature for a 16-year-old, and I kind of have a unique place in that I'm friends with the dudes that are trying to save the world." So, mm-hmm. He's already shown his willingness to stand up to his mom. This just would have been the next step of like, mom, now I'm making the decision not just to stay at the base, but I'm also going to travel to this other planet for a few minutes.
I'm going
to
wear an awesome retro-looking spaceman helmet, according to the previews. we're going to see how Vector Sigma plays out next week, I believe. Gog, any other talking points from your end?
Nothing I can think of offhand. I'll try to think of something before we finish if I have anything else I can think of.
Alrighty. Aaron, anything else from your notes?
I've burnt through most of my stuff. It seems like Fowler's getting a little bit more pushy.
Oh, yeah.
With things, because he was at the base and then he called in twice. I don't know. I mean, granted, things have not gone well for him being a liaison in the last, having that whatever power source stolen and that sort of thing happening. But I wonder if they're trying to push up Fowler as a character maybe a little bit more, or if that's just leading to, again, I'm sitting here deconstructing, to give drive for the Autobots to take care of this issue and get things back in hand.
Oh, yeah, I thought that some of his input had to just do with going with the way I was saying things with the scene when all the Autobots kind of get hot-headed at each other, like just showing the kind of a lot of stuff going wrong at once, because he's calling in basically saying, hey, there were a lot of casualties that last fight, we got injured people, and if you don't tighten up the laces and pull yourselves together, I'm gonna have the Pentagon going over my head and saying that we're gonna be shutting down your base.
Yeah.
So it was definitely to add some tension, but I also would like to think that Fowler will get to have a few more character moments in this season as time goes on. Also, he has a chip lodged in his butt.
Yeah,
that was a fun line to come out of nowhere.
and that's an example of when you do use the pseudoscience, because that's what's going through people's mind is it's like, well, can't you just track him? Like, and Fowler is like, well, you can track me. Why can't you track a living robot?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, we're not sure.
Indignance was great. Cause he's like, oh, cause he wasn't happy. He's like, Uncle Sam lodged a chip in my backside. Yeah. You can't even track your own leader. Like, it was great.
But that's a good contrast to the whole biosignature key thing is I think this was a time where it's worth at least dropping that line.
Yeah.
Because, that's the kind of thing somebody would say in the thread. Well, why can't they just track Prime, that we can do that? And it's like, well, yeah, but
Uncle Sam,
the Decepticons are blocking it. So,
Uncle Sam,
yes, we did think of that.
Biosignature on all my keys. Are you telling me you can't do that? That's what I would have written. Well, I'm not writing the show. I have two more quick notes just about things that amused me. In this episode, number one, I really love that Jack's entire uniform for his job is a paper hat that balances precariously on top of his hair. Like it's not even pushed over his hair. It's literally attached to the top of his hair on his model.
Yeah.
And I kind of think they're self-aware of that when he has that line saying, I'm just here wearing the hat. I love that this fast food place he works at is so poor that their uniforms are a paper hat. And that's it. It's like, yeah, every day is casual Friday. Just wear the paper hat. You're good to go. Also, violence-themed fast food gets me pretty excited. The other line that I thought was awesome, which I had to write down and then add a note to, was number one, I love that Megatron basically just told Orion Pax about the evil warlord Ratchet. And then went on to refer to him as the Doctor of Doom.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was amazing. Kind of interesting seeing as like Ratchet is one of the least active characters of the team. Not as a negative, I mean, but he's the guy that just kind of stays back at the base and is the support. He's the only time Ratchet shows leadership is, and we've discussed this before too, is he's like the Doctor, where he's not necessarily in charge with the chain of command, but when it comes time for him to do what he needs to do, like save lives and make quick decisions that are going to save lives, he jumps in and takes the helm and has no problems barking orders at people. Mm-hmm. Just like a doctor trying to save lives absolutely should be able to do. But it's just funny because other than that, like he's not even this, like really the second in chain of command. I mean, most part, he's just like the engineer, the medic. And now this weird fiction that Megatron is implanting into Orion Pax's brain is like, he's
responsible for the death of the entire planet is the part that I really like. and also it's kind of cunning because, as you said, he hardly ever leaves the base. So it's very unlikely that Optimus will even encounter him to say, like, you, the Doctor of Doom, I am going to stop your evil ways. Because Ratchet would not be there to say, what on earth are you talking about? Why are you calling me silly things like Doctor Doom?
Yeah.
Also, because it's Jeffrey Combs as a medical person, and I'm still thinking of Herbert West, and it gave me some chuckles. I thought that I was like, that's funny, Warlord Ratchet. Then Doctor of Doom just was like, all right, this is going in the notes. I'm writing this down right now on my whiteboard. That's all I have for my notes, actually, for this episode. So does anyone else have any talking points?
No. If we don't, all we I can, have is a couple
if we don't,
of just
we can have like a minor spoiler notes. Section where we talk about the trailer. Did you see the trailer for the next episode?
Oh, the 30-second one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we could talk about that.
Dang it, I only watched it while we were talking now.
Well, it wasn't like a super deep trailer. Like, the main part of the trailer I remember is that scene of Starscream in Orion Pax's records room, like, transforming and escaping as Viacons are showing up to shoot at him.
Yeah.
We also see this giant
quadruped
hatchet-esque Viacon headed thing on Cybertron.
I remember that thing is like looking like an Uber zombie in some way.
Yeah,
I'm curious what that is.
It's probably just the big bad that they're gonna have to avoid or kill or something to get standing in between them and Vector Sigma.
Mm-hmm.
But
The thing I've actually been really liking about these episode previews is they're barely giving us anything. Because
that's true.
I've said it before. I like going into movies and TV shows I like as blind as possible, and I'm really liking that there is no spoiler to drop on me. There's no one who can ruin this for me yet, until like friggin' Dubai decides to start showing episodes in advance. And if it happens, I'm gonna keep my ears to the ground on that stuff, because next time that happens, I gotta get the warning out to everyone. Like, hey, everyone, episode's out in Dubai. Don't watch it till we record prime time.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can also briefly mention as well that the Prime soundtrack is up for pre-order on Amazon.
Oh, and
you can get it as both the CD for about $15 US, or you can just get the digital MP3 download for about just under 10.
Yes.
So, but it's the composer, can't remember his name right off the top of my head. I feel bad. But he had posted some stuff on his website you were able to stream. This was months ago when the early on in the show. Yeah. He eventually took it down, I assume because the studio was like, we'd rather not leave this up because we've decided that we're going to sell it.
And the stream had been cracked open and people were just downloading.
Right. And it's on YouTube. It's been on YouTube on several different channels now for months. But what was interesting though is the soundtrack listing has about three times as many tracks as what he had originally posted. So, there's definitely a lot.
Huh? One of them is called Dreadwing, isn't it?
I know. Yeah. So, which was weird though, because this is labeled as the season one soundtrack. So I'm wondering if there were just some extra tracks that they put on there or what. But you can sample it on Amazon. But
and if you did download from his stream and you liked it, please do buy it.
I'm gonna buy it. I
meant the audience more so than
no. But I'm saying like even with me, like I did that as well, and I've enjoyed the music and
I love it. It's great stuff.
I'll probably, I'm like you, I generally like to have
CDs, but I think in this case I'll probably just get the digital version because the price difference is substantial.
I'm probably going to do the CD, but the thing is, I'm probably going to pre-order the CD on Amazon CA because they said that we're going to get it over here by about March 6 or so.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to probably pre-order the CD, and then eventually, over the next like 3 weeks, I'm going to forget I did that, and then probably buy it digitally, and then have the CD show up and go like, oh, I forgot I did that.
I was kind of hoping that if you bought the CD that they'd just let you have the digital version, but I guess it's considered to be two different vendors.
I make a digital anyway off a CD.
No, I know, but yeah. I don't want to wait. I want to download it and listen to it.
And it'd be nice to have a mastered set of like 320 kbps MP3s with artwork and extra notes in the files. That's what Collide does. A band I really like who sell their stuff digitally, and it's a great way to do digital business. But the Prime soundtrack is coming out. Season 1 on Blu-ray and DVD is coming out very soon as well. I got my Blu-ray copies pre-ordered.
Yep.
Sounds like the number of extras are titanic, commentary-wise at least. I'm really pumped.
That comes out soon too. Really, I have that pre-ordered soon as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the first week of March?
Yep. I highly recommend, if any of you out there have any way of watching Blu-rays, please get the Blu-ray on. Show there is business for Blu-ray releases of Prime.
Yeah. And on Amazon, it's like, I mean, it's like, I think over 33% off.
Yeah.
The retail price for the season one Blu-ray set is about $60, and Amazon has it for less than 40. So.
And again, if you've been downloading the show like I have, to keep up with spoilers, to keep up with what's happening, I kind of have to download it. Especially right now, I don't have cable in this apartment because I don't want to pay for cable. And I went looking on iTunes Canada. I cannot find Transformers Prime on there. If you've enjoyed the show, please, if you can, support it by buying the actual media. Or give it ratings if you liked it, you downloaded it. It you don't have to. I'm not going to yell at someone who doesn't, but I feel it really makes a strong point, not just to people who work on Prime, but just to the nature of internet media in general, to actually purchase things after having downloaded them. It makes a strong point against all kinds of nasty stuff I'm not going to talk about on here. And also, if you haven't seen the show in HD and you have a Blu-ray player, you kind of owe it to yourself to watch the show on Blu-ray. I'm really pumped to see proper, like, encoded to a high-def disc copies of episodes. Because I very much appreciate what Dark Prime had provided for us. And I am not mad that Dark Prime is not able to provide high-def caps for us now, because guess what? That was out of the kindness of Dark Prime's heart.
Yeah.
And if you're stuck in a position like me where you want to see the episode right away, just got to watch it standard def. It's not going to be the best experience, but there are still people capping the show. If you can watch it on the hub, please do that so it actually gets ratings. But if you're like me and don't actually have the hub and you can't buy it on iTunes, as far as I can tell, then do not despair. There are still ways to do things. But please do buy media too if you enjoy it.
I got excited that I now have a hub in HD, so I've been watching it.
Oh.
In HD on my TV. Mwahaha.
Welcome to a year ago, doofus.
Hey, you need to talk to Comcast. I was all excited when I was down there and saw that you have all these channels in HD. What?
Oh, guys, settle down. All right, I don't need to be slinging horrible cuss words like doofus around on this children's show. It's settled down. Do you guys want to do a listener question?
Let's do one.
Yeah, let's do one. We've had, I mean, in our listener question backlog, we've had some listener questions come up now and then, like less than three times, which were entirely Prime oriented. And I thought maybe I'll kind of save those ones up for when we start doing Prime time again, because it makes more sense than basically, you know, leaving Seth out in the cold when we're answering these questions about the Prime show. So I have a question from Big Trans Fan. Who says, "Hi, boys. After listening to the podcast for quite some time, I've finally come up with some interesting questions. First question, since Transformers Prime consumes a lot of resources, and as of season one has a relatively small to make toys out of..."
I think he forgot to put the word cast.
Okay, small cast to make toys out of. That made my brain skip for a second. I was wondering if a similar scenario to that of Beast Wars would happen, where non-show character toys would be made to help fund the brand. Do you think this would happen, if it hasn't happened by the time you answered this, or would only character-based toys and variants populate the line like animated? Now that we've seen First Edition and the first Wave or 3 of Prime RID, so far it does seem to be moving far more in the direction of animated, where character variants of the main cast come first. Animated did have like toy characters happen, primarily Oil Slick, before he finally showed up in the show. So there's a chance, but and unless, you know, Ironhide never shows up in the show, there's another one. But for now, it looks like they are far more interested in sticking to the show's on-screen cast. It feels like maybe that was possibly a lesson learned from animated that they wanted to stick with, if it did really well for animated. I wouldn't think that non-show characters are impossible, but it definitely right now feels like that's the focus. What do you guys think? Like it from what we've seen so far, anyway.
I think that we are going to see mostly show characters, and the out that we have is the fact that this toy line isn't necessarily Prime toys. It's Robots in Disguise. Mm-hmm. So we know that we have whatever the 8 Deluxe is coming up out of Fall of Cybertron. So if there's a point where, okay, well, we've run through all the show characters, all of the one-off guys like Wheeljack that we got, you know, we'll do the Fall of Cybertron, and then maybe that's when they'll slip in some of the movie trilogy stuff, not as a whole line, but maybe as a wave or as part of a wave and refresh with other things. For where we are right now, I think that the just, hey, look, it's Transformers toys line is a whole lot better off than saying that it's a Prime toy line or whatever. So I think that's giving them the option to kind of do what they want to do and not be locked into, we got to come up with another way to make a Bumblebee transform in a different way at a $10 price point.
Mm. Also worth noting, just going off that the Cyberverse, primarily a Prime toy line, does have three non-Prime releases in it that are just ditching the Prime subtitle from their Transformers heading. Gog, any thoughts on non-show characters showing up in toy lines?
I don't mind it at all. It's it's some of the coolest figures that we've gotten have just been kind of just random stuff in the past. Like even looking like back at the Cybertron Energon stuff, like some of the repaints and stuff there were actually really neat.
Armorhide too.
Yeah, awesome. Absolutely. That's a great one. And Armorhide, in my opinion, was the best scout from that entire entire toy line.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't in the show. Like you said, Oil Slick, before they kind of put Oil Slick in there, I mean, they kind of wedged him in there after the fact, but I think we all universally loved Oil Slick as a toy before he had any fiction at all, when he was just a toy that had nothing to do with anything on the show.
Yeah.
So no, I don't mind it at all. And I'd rather see that than if they're going to do a new character, like let's repaint RC and call her Chromia. Like, I don't want that. Like,
yeah.
That's easy. I'd rather them just, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess the repaint is going to happen regardless. So, but no, I don't mind that stuff at all. And it's, you know, I guess there's people out there whose outlook when it comes to collecting makes them a completionist. And I feel bad for those people, because I'm not that at all. But in the end, everybody has a choice of what they want to buy. So if they make stuff like that, then if there's a couple toys in a wave you don't want, then hey, you've just saved yourself some money. The people who do like them can get them and enjoy them. So
your logic and sense talk.
I think it's, well, I mean, the only time where that's not true is if something ends up really peg-warming badly. But like, nobody wants another Tuner Mudflap, but
I wish Armor Topspin would go on sale like Tuner Mudflap did, because I actually kind of want Armor Topspin.
You can have him. But no, I don't mind at all if they make characters like that. And worst case scenario, too, they can always just
find a way to put them in the show, maybe even as a background character, kind of like with Oil Slick. Like, hey, we already have a character here. Let's use him. Let's give him a little character doing something with him. So they could just give him a cameo. Like, I know that's a little harder to do in a 3D show, but they could do that. And now guess what? He's canon. So
head swap some Viacons. Create some Viacon-based characters. Give me Viacon commanders. Someone already tried to come up with a Jetstorm, I think. Or no, there was a cool digibash of the first edition Viacon done up as Thrust, where his car mode was identical, but the robot mode had Thrust colors on it. And I was like, that'd be kind of cool as a repaint idea. Question two. As of Season 1, Unicron has shown the ability to use a portion of his power and exert his will even when only a small portion of his mind is active. What if Unicron used his power to resurrect Transformers who have died on Earth, restoring them and upgrading them while under his influence, making them his heralds to act out his will where he cannot? What story potential would this have for characters like Skyquake, who Starscream tried to make into a meat puppet? Possible drama for RC, or even some closure for her partner's death, or any other characters who've fallen as of this reading? Also money-making and saving potential for the animation studio and Hasbro, such as building off an already-made character model instead of making one from scratch, changing it enough where a new toy would be justified and some niggling problems Cliff's voice could be resolved through the changes of Unicron's reformatting. So, resurrecting zombie characters. This question came in like mid to late November, so this was post the two episodes that had zombified existing characters brought back. I think if this was going to happen, I would not want it to happen for more than maybe a 3-episode period tops, because I think among the worries from the opening 5-parter that we had was kind of, what if this whole show revolves around what's Dark Energon going to do next? And among things it could do is make zombies. I was kind of hoping the show wouldn't come down to having zombies everywhere all the time, because it would kind of deflate their presence, I think. Having maybe one Transformer resurrect in this way could be interesting, but it would have to be done really well. And I don't think I'd want to see that happen over a more interesting plot point myself. Gog, how do you feel about resurrections?
If Unicron ever does return, which I hope he does, because if he doesn't, they kind of blew their load very anticlimactically when it comes to pulling the Unicron card. I don't mind the story that we got as long as it leads into bigger and better later on in the show. With that being said, that makes sense, because given that so far Dark Energon's main function, at least in the hands of Megatron, has been to resurrect the dead. Given that Dark Energon is supposed to be the lifeblood of Unicron, it would make sense that he would have that innate ability and could use it to even greater degree than Megatron could. Mm. So if Unicron was to ever come back, I think that would be kind of neat if he took maybe some deceased characters and brought them back as horror avatars or something like that. I mean, kind of like with Cliffjumper, where people see him and they're just appalled by like what is going on with this guy that we know. Mm-hmm. If there are some substantial character deaths or one or two here and there, using that ability could definitely make a impact on the story arc. But I mean, I guess I've never thought about that before. But
it's very story logical.
We've seen Megatron use the blood of Unicron and look at what he's done with it. But what happens when Unicron uses the power of the blood of Unicron? Because that's his power. It's not being used secondhand. Yeah. It's being used. It's being used by the dude who it belongs to. So and we didn't really see that happen at all when Unicron actually came. So yeah, That's actually a really good point, and I think that it could be used well. I think my fears about the overuse of Dark Energon have been completely, you know, squashed out.
Oh,
thankfully.
I mean,
I know you weren't implying otherwise, but it was like, yeah, I was really worried after that, because I thought that's what they were doing. They were setting it up, and I just said like, yeah, I mean, we got to wait and see how this plays out, but the potential is there for some really bad MacGuffin-esque story writing here that just gives the writers an easy way out. And thankfully that did not happen at all. And it makes when the Dark Energon does show up, that it actually makes it kind of interesting because it's not like here we go again.
Yeah, we haven't seen it for a while.
Yeah. So, but no, I think that's a great point. And I think showing Unicron employing that power firsthand versus some dude finding it and using it. Yeah. That's, I'm surprised that I haven't heard more people discuss that because it makes complete sense.
Yeah. I think my hesitation,
bravo, big trans fan.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. I think my hesitation comes from the way I saw a similar thing done, and I'm not going to say it's going to turn out like this at all, but in Superlink/Energon, a similar power was used in terms of let's resurrect guys who have died. And yeah. It was done in a way that it was the worst way to do it. And so that's why I'm the whole notion of resurrect a character and make them evil. It's something when it's done well, I think it'd be fantastic, but I still always think about, I have seen it done the worst way. So I definitely would want to, like, I'd hope that if it happens, it would happen in an awesome way. Cause definitely it's very story logical. It would be a great way to work in the notion of Unicron's heralds. It'd maybe be a little bit like how Apocalypse back in like X-Men did stuff, turning mutants into his own like horsemen. Yeah, I don't know. Aaron, how do you feel about it?
A lot of what was covered. My biggest fear would it just becoming too heavy-fisted.
You're heavy-fisted.
Yeah. I don't think there's a whole lot, at least in this point in time. I know that character design and building those models takes time. I don't think it takes the same resources that it used to, but like back in the Beast Wars days.
Hmm.
Because, you know, even in places where it could have been a palette, you know, a color swap or something similar, you know, Bumblebee Cliffjumper, you know, first time in a long time, they're actually separate models, separate characters. And Cliffjumper was basically burnt off in three episodes, if you want to include all the Terracon stuff. So I don't think that's as much of an issue as it was, you know, Cheetor to Tigatron with Beast Wars. So I don't think that the money difference is there, especially for the differences in I believe also production side money as we're getting we're getting, not to belittle the Beast Wars guys, but we're getting some guest actors that have some chops to them rather than a bunch of Vancouver voice actors.
What you saying about Vancouver? I'll fight you.
I'm saying that there is a serious acting presence and production presence there.
That's hell yes. DC, okay. DC represent. That's my hand touching my chest.
I do think it'd be interesting if Unicron tried to go about tampering in a more subtle way. Then I guess that's where I'm thinking about it being ham-fisted. You know, if it's more like Whispers type of thing on characters that have had some Dark Energon issues rather than
sends a 50-foot-tall zombie Cliffjumper comes after RC screaming.
Right, because Cliffjumper's been completely dismembered at this point, hasn't he? Just been, like, vaporized?
Well, no, I mean, he got cut in half, and then there was a large explosion, and we never saw him again. That's about it.
So, yeah, there might be two halves of a Cliffjumper out there still. I just... short of like sending him through a shredder and sorting out his separate bits and then melting all those down.
His top half is good, but his top half is evil, but his legs are still good, and that is the conflict of the episode. Are Cliffjumper's legs trying to communicate with the Autobots through Morse code?
Or they could do like animated Starscream where he's a disembodied head for a while, and then Starscream's head finds but instead like Starscream just has no legs. So, like, he eventually finds Cliffjumper's legs, and it further just sets RC over the edge that now Starscream, of all people, is walking around with Cliffjumper's legs.
Using his legs?
Give those back now!
Damn it! So, yeah. Totally makes sense. Wouldn't mind seeing it.
And then when Starscream transforms, like he has like the lower half of like a Dodge Charger or whatever he is, like on the bottom of the jet.
Just hanging out, bouncing around.
I want to see this happen though. Like Cliff Jumper's dead. Like literally, all that's left is his legs. But like,
Starscream really needs them.
I want to see Eradicon create this. Like take a first edition, or not a first edition, but an RID Cliff Jumper toy, and somehow take the lower half that turns into the lower half of the car. So I want to see like Jet Charger Starscream with Cliff pants.
I'll fund it. Final question from Big Trans Fan. Question 3. Every time I see the Eradicon's vehicle mode and look at the silhouette of their robot mode, my circuits sizzle. He didn't actually write that. But every time I see the word every time I see, I can't help it. Every time he sees the Eradicon's vehicle mode and silhouette of their robot mode, he thinks of Lockdown. How would you guys like a prime Lockdown based off of the Eradicon design? Thanks for taking the time to answer my questions. I look forward to hearing thoughts. I would like to see what it would look like, but I think it would kind of be not worth Lockdown to make him an Eradicon with a new head or anything like that. I can see where you're coming from with the similar silhouette to a degree. Just kind of like the lanky Frankenstein-y kind of proportions and the big legs and the cool car mode. It's something I'd like to see a Eradicon do, just so I could see what the concept would look like. But I don't know if right now that would also be something I just want to see on a shelf or done in the show. I think Lockdown really deserves to be a unique model wherever he happens.
I agree. Yeah, Lockdown is top tier and needs to have his own mold every time, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would like to see someone kitbash a Viacon or a Eradicon into Lockdown just to see what it would look like, but that's not what I'd like to see canonically or out of the toy line myself. Aaron, you're eerily silent.
No, I was just thinking of the current price to kitbash a Viacon into Lockdown.
Yeah, he's got to go hunt down a $30 to $70 deluxe and
a touch. Yeah, I think it's. I don't think it would be very difficult in the grand scheme of things to do that because they are very similar silhouettes. Maybe Lockdown is that, you know, that step up progression of dude got a name and kept a similar look because hey, it worked.
Well, what if? Okay, here's a way it could work for me. There's a Viacon who becomes Lockdown and starts adding parts of other destroyed robots to himself.
Yeah.
Perhaps including Cliff Jumper's legs. Now you have like a Viacon that's attached all kinds of stuff to himself and has a hook for a hand. That's
got Lockdown upgrade route.
That's something I wouldn't mind seeing like in a pseudo fanfic level. Like, I don't know, if the club was going to do a comic book in the Primeverse.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like something that would be neat to see in that. But I think Lockdown is such a strong silhouette of a character and such a unique entity, albeit a very new one. And he is also top tier, as was stated earlier. If it was done in an official capacity, I don't think I'd really like it that much conceptually. If it looks good, then it'll look good. But I don't know. Seems weird. Anyway, that's a listener question done on primetime. What will they invent next? Sliced bread? Thank you all for joining us. We'll be back to cover Orion Pax Part 2 next week. And continue watching the show that so far we are all pretty much enjoying. Hope you're enjoying Prime as well. If you're not, don't feel oppressed by our positivity. We don't hate you. Yet. And please up the thread if you want to share any thoughts on what we said. You got anything that you want to contribute in there? Go for it. Type with your fingers. Until then, this is Evangelist, Gog Dog, and Aaron, and we are once again forevermore Prime out.
And some badass perpetrators, and they're here to stay.